Blog Talk Radio.
Keep on giving to each other. Give it all you got. Spread some love a little.
Hello, everyone. Good evening. This is Lily 44 Blog Talk Radio. I'm hoping everyone is having a good evening. Tonight, I'm hoping I'm having an exciting show. I have a featured guest, Dr. James Johnson of Pineville, Louisiana. And he is an author of The American Criminal Justice System, The Effects of Psychological and Socioeconomic Factors on African Americans. And he's also a friend of mine. We are part of an organization here in town, the American Legion, Post 50 Camp Stafford, and I enjoy working with him. He's a very smart, intelligent man. Before we get started with our author, Mr. Johnson, or Dr. Johnson, that is, are you there? Dr. Johnson, are you there? Must have not called in yet. Well, anyway, I'll get started with my part at least. We're talking about schools versus prisons at this time. As you know, we, as the taxpayers of each state, I'm not saying we're not concerned because of all the economic disasters that are going on, the fires that are going on all over the United States at this time, but it's something that I kind of caught my eye. We have time to build prisons, but we don't have time to build schools. So I thought that I would do a little excerpt on that. And I was reading an article. It's by a Jordan Flannery, and it's from the Wiretap magazine online, and it's November the 16th, 2007. And it says education versus incarceration, and it's dealing with a small town here in Louisiana, and it's called Tallulah. And if I'm not mistaken, you might be familiar with the incident in Gina that happened. And Tallulah is a small town in northeastern Louisiana, one of the poorest regions of the United States. It also says that it's like, it is about 90 miles from the non-legendary town of Gina. And like Gina, it's a town with a large youth prison that was closed after allegations of abuse and brutality. Also like Gina, residents of Tallulah are involved in modern civil rights struggle. Their town has become a battleground in national debate on whether to spend money to educate or incarcerate our poor, mostly black youth. The guy who wrote the article said on one Saturday afternoon he visited with Mr. Haywood Fair, a civil rights movement veteran from Tallulah. Mr. Fair is one of the founders of People United Education in Action, a grassroots organization dedicated to transforming the local prison, now called Steve Hoyle Rehabilitation Center, and primarily holding adults convicted of nonviolent offenses into a success center, which would give classes and training if they succeed in their struggle. It will be the first time in this country where, for decades, funding for education has been cut while prisons have been built, that a prison has been shut down and replaced by a school, a groundbreaking reversal of a nationwide trend, which I think is very, very, very exciting. Then also, again, reading another article from Inside Higher Education, and it's dated February 29th, 2008, and it's prisons versus colleges. And it says that as far as the ratio of state spending on corrections to higher education from the year 2007 and to 1987 and 2007, the ratio for Louisiana alone went from 0.41 to 0.46 in that time limit. So you see where what's more important to us here in the state of Louisiana. What's more important to us in the state of Louisiana is building more prisons. Now, I also went to other websites, other states that is, to find out, just one second here. Let's see. A little turned around here just for a second here. I also read about the state of California, and I also have another article about Charleston from the Charleston News. It says, this is from Your Youth Noise, and it's prison spending versus education. And education is supposed to be our top priority. It's surely more important than the correction system. Sadly, not everyone agrees. If state spending continues the way it has been in the 5 years, the budget for prisons will exceed the budget for higher education. California will spend $10 billion on prisons in the fiscal year of 2007 through 2008, a 9% increase from last year. The state will spend $12 billion on higher education, almost 6% increase from last year. The actual total is about $10.2 billion after money for financial aid and other non-instructional programs are subtracted. Let's see. Okay, and also says on here that if spending patterns hold, spending on higher education will grow about 5% a year. Spending on prisons will grow at least 9% a year. It also says that in the fiscal year of 2012 to 2013, prison spendings will equal about $15.4 billion a year. Higher education spending will only be about $15.3 billion a year. It's a good thing there's no link between education and crime. Then this would be really shameful. The U.S. Department of Justice states that typical offender is undereducated, unemployed, and living in poverty before incarceration. 75% of the state prison inmates didn't complete high school. 59% of the federal prison inmates did not, according to a 2003 report from the Bureau of Justice Statistics. 66% of state prison inmates with learning disabilities didn't complete high school. Four times as many young men ages 20 to 39 in the general population as the prison population has taken some college classes or post-secondary courses. 54% of whites in the general population, 11% in prison, 44% of blacks in the general population, 8% in prison, 32% of Hispanics in the general population, 7% in prison. Less educated inmates are more likely to return to prison. 77% of inmates who didn't finish high school had a prior sentence compared to 71% who finished high school and 66% who had some college. Throwing more money at the correction system and hoping the problem will go away is not a solution. We can continue to build bigger and better prisons to show that we're tough on crime, but this has nothing to do with crime prevention. It is a band-aid, a flimsy temporary fix that ignores the real problem. We need to invest in education to give all kids the opportunity to do something more with their lives than end up in behind bars. The choice between prisons and higher education should not be a difficult one. Now, I thought that was very interesting to find that out. Let's see. Dr. Johnson, are you there? Dr. Johnson? Dr. Johnson, you there? Dr. Johnson, are you there? I think I just dropped my call. Let's see. Dr. Johnson, if you can hear me, can you please call back for me? Thank you. Okay, I really wanted to talk to Dr. Johnson. look like I'm having some difficulty with getting my guest on. Let's see. I might have to do it without him tonight. I really was very inspired by his story and about his book. And I'm going to see if I can get him to call me back. Dr. Johnson. I keep calling you Mr. Johnson. Dr. Johnson, if you can you please call me back at 347-677-1749, please? Thank you. Are you there? Are you there, Dr. Johnson? Let's see. Give me one second. Dr. Johnson, are you there? Dr. Johnson?
Okay,
you there?
Yes, I'm here.
I am so sorry.
Yeah, I've been here for over 15, 20 minutes.
You know what? It was something that happened.
Yes.
I apologize. I really do. I apologize.
Okay.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes, I'm here.
I am so sorry.
Yeah, I've been here. over
15, 20
minutes.
You know what? It was something that happened.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. It's okay. Right. I guess because we're on the computer.
Okay.
Okay. Yes. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing well. Doing well.
Good. How was your day?
Okay.
Did you have a good day?
Yes, very good. It was a little rainy, but we're making it.
Okay.
I heard your part on the schools.
Uh-huh.
And it was inspiring.
Okay. I'm glad. Thank you. Okay. Now, let's get started with your book. What gave you the idea or what sparked you to write this book?
Well, you know, I'm one of these education buffs. I've been like a professional student for years. And my field of study is criminal justice. And I've written numerous papers. And I always was intrigued about the criminal justice system and how it benefited or how problems happen with African Americans.
Uh-huh.
And the more I pondered this, it came into my being, since I am African-American, that, hey, something's just not right about this system. So when I was looking to start my dissertation, when I was working on my doctorate, of course you have to come up with something that's unique, something that's going to provide some kind of educational value to your the people that you're trying to inform. And this is where I came up with this title, In a Dream. I was dreaming. I said, well, we should look at how African Americans get into the bind that they're in when it comes to crime. It just doesn't just happen.
Uh-huh.
And when you formulate everything and you kind of structure the system and you see how it works against African Americans. So I thought, after looking at different subjects for my dissertation, I settled on the American criminal justice system, the effects of psychological and socioeconomic factors on African Americans.
Okay, okay. Now,
and those factors, mm-hmm. you look at both joblessness, you look at poverty, you look at discrimination, and you factor in a lot of things that people may not understand.
Okay. Now, tell me this. How do you think this book is going to affect the people who read it or your readers?
That was good. I was just talking to my wife about a review. I had an individual, you know, they always can review it if you put it on Amazon.com.
Uh-huh.
And the individual said, Dr. Johnson, at the beginning, you know, I put a lot of theory. There's loads of theory. And I examine other authors and what they've done.
Uh-huh.
And, Salita, what's so unique about this dissertation and this book, most of the information, especially when we get to the back portion and we talk about surveys and data collected, all that is from African Americans. And the information is from African Americans. The thought pattern is African American, which I am. So that gives you a premise of where I was trying to go and how I was trying to get there. And the reader, back to the one that I told you did the review, he said, Doc, it was kind of like theory, kind of dry at the first part. Then I got into the meat, and I really enjoyed it. And they give you stars. So 5 stars, I got 4. So
I figured,
hey, maybe I'm on the right path.
Yes, you are. You are, definitely. Now, what do you want your readers to get from this book? When they finish reading, what do you want their sense or their attitude to be?
Well, I want them to understand that blacks are not just criminals. We're people, and we have desires, we have passions, and we want to have a good life. We want to enjoy the American dream, and we don't want to be hindered by anything that's in our way. And the way my book, and if you look through some of it, it covers some of these environmental issues that we have to face with. And when I say environmental, not meaning rain, shine, sleet, or snow, we're talking about crumbling schools, deteriorating houses, housing projects. So I want them to understand that there's a reason why blacks commit crimes. Not that it's justified, but to give you a sense of, okay, this is why that happened. Now I can understand it. And especially if you're not a minority, you can really get into it. You may not agree, but sometimes the truth is there to be disagreeable.
Uh-huh.
But the facts are the facts. And that's what I put in the book. There are many facts.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, the way the justice system is now, can we expect that justice will truly be equal?
Do you want the real answer, or do you want an answer that people would think in their minds?
I want you to give me the real answer.
Well, it's dismal.
Okay.
Because we're dealing with human factors.
Okay.
And people have a tendency to believe what they want to believe, their upbringing, you know, their culture, these things, and they are deep-rooted. I was born in the 50s.
Uh-huh.
So I remember right here in Alexandria, Louisiana,
mm-hmm.
being white and black fountains. I used to go to a store called Crest.
Uh-huh.
And Crest had the white and the black. You know the Jim Crow.
Yes.
Laws and stuff passed. So it's not, you would think that some of that would be gone, but it's deeply rooted in the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part we have to get through. And if we can just persevere and look at each other as true Americans, we're all trying to be in this boat together.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause if the boat springs a leak, we all have to try to mend it, or
uh-huh.
the boat is going to sink. And that's where we are today in our American travel. If
uh-huh.
we have many holes in this boat we are on, and we have to try to fix those holes. And the American criminal justice system is one of those gaping holes that
uh-huh.
we have to tend to.
Mm. Okay. Now, do you believe that with President Obama in office that the justice system will be impacted or affected in some kind of way?
I definitely do.
Okay.
Let me share with you before
uh-huh.
we get into the real crust of the book, why
okay.
I believe the president has a plan.
Uh-huh.
Agree with the plan. First, he supports law enforcement, as I do. I worked in law enforcement for over 14 years.
Okay.
The law enforcement side. I did corrections. I did customs. So I know about hook 'em and crook 'em and lock 'em up.
Yeah.
You know, that's a saying we used to have on the beat.
Uh-huh.
But he, or President Obama, plus the vice president, they both are committed to fully funding the COPS program. Are you
okay.
familiar with that program?
Uh-huh. No, I'm not, but go ahead. You can explain it to me?
Yeah, and let me briefly tell you what it is.
Okay.
It's a program that I believe it came out with President Bush, but it was never funded. They wanted to put 50,000 cops, well, back then it was 100,000, they were going to put on the beat, put community policing to help you better get acquainted with the police. All police are not bad.
Uh-huh.
This is going to be one of his main goals, is getting that fully funded
uh-huh.
where we have that safety. You want to feel safe in your neighborhoods, and there are a lot of neighborhoods in America that are, frankly, not safe with
mm-hmm.
gangs and drugs and prostitution. We have to get a handle on all of that, and that's covered in my book when we talk about crime. He's
Thank
also
you.
Addressing accountability, police accountability. We can't continually shoot people because we think that they have guns. You understand where I'm coming from with that?
I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that, definitely.
Police brutality. You can't. Rodney King was just one example. You may remember last year in New Orleans, there was an incident, and it seemed like everyone has a camera.
Uh-huh.
So, it had policemen that was beating a black guy, and it had one of the police were on a horse, and the horse was trying to block the view of the guy that was filming the beating,
mm-hmm.
but it made national news, and this
yep.
is not just not just New Orleans. It happens in Houston, Dallas, throughout, but most of the time you won't have it videotaped like we have now, but everyone nowadays have some media to film it, to prove it, and some people still don't believe that these things happen in America.
Exactly.
So that's one facet he's looking at. The next thing is, which I think is very important, is we suffer from recidivism with our ex-offenders.
Okay.
Go to jail, 9 times out of 10, you're going to go back within the next 5 years.
Exactly.
Why? Because we put you out, give you $200, and say, see you. That's not the way you reintroduce people back into society.
Mm-hmm.
They've paid their debts, but as long as you go for a job and you put on the resume or put on the job application that you're a convicted felon or you've been to jail, they don't have a job for you.
Exactly.
So what the president is doing, he's going to support job training.
Uh-huh.
You remember back when we had the welfare system big and they were doing welfare to work?
Yes.
Those programs, they're envisioning doing the same thing for our prison population. Get them trained in a useful job, not just menial tasks. You know, I had a guy that came back from Louisiana where he was incarcerated. And while he was in prison, he learned leather work. So when he got out, he opened up him a shop making belts, anything to do with leather, he could do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he applied for a grant, was able to get that money. But look at him. He's paid his debt to society. He's turned around now. He's a useful, viable citizen, and he's producing income that's legally legal, and he's also being a taxpayer. So that's why I like that program.
Next,
what we're going to look at is youth violence. And the president, coming from Chicago, he's familiar with gangs and everything. But there's a program called Ceasefire that he started in Chicago. And what it does, it works to prevent gang violence. It gives the youth a way out. It's called 20 Promise. And it's normally looked at across the nation as something that's promising for urban youth, and it's an opportunity to succeed, if it's funded. And the president said, "Hey, I'm going to fund it. I'm going to make sure this happens, because the best way to stop people from going to prison is get them while they're young. So after school programs and things like that."
Exactly.
Next, what we had to address, and he's going to address this, and I fully back it, is gun violence in our cities. He's going to, are you familiar with the ban that they have on assault rifles?
Yes. Uh-huh.
He wants to make that permanent, and I support that. You do not need an AK-47 to go deer hunting.
Nope.
You see? So, and what he's going to do also is cut out some of these loopholes. We have a big glaring loophole, and one of them, if I could share with you, is the gun shows. You can go to gun shows and bypass all the sign-in. Crazy people can go to gun shows and sometimes buy weapons, assault rifles. So if we cut out some of those loopholes for the wrong people get in weapons, we extend or make permanent the assault weapons ban. And third, if we look at weapons in the home and we make them where children cannot operate these weapons, you know, it's easy to put a gun lock and stuff. That's the easy thing. But gun manufacturers can also make programmable weapons where you own this weapon, only one can fire it is you.
Yep.
The technology is there. We see it on television all the time. So the president supports all of that. And last but not least, the big thing that he supports is the end of racial profiling.
Yeah, awesome.
And I say amen to that.
Amen.
Because believe it or not, that's why we have more blacks in jail, on parole, or in prison is because of racial profiling. So that's why I figure that the president will be very successful when it comes to crime, law enforcement, and keeping America safe.
No. Okay. Hmm. Okay. Now, tell me this. Can you sum your book up?
Yes, but I wanted to go through one thing. I emailed you some information. Did you get that last?
Survey? Did you email me the survey?
The survey?
Yeah, the survey. I didn't get a chance to open it up, but yeah, I saw it.
Okay. Oh, I'd like to just, how much time do we have?
We have 8 minutes.
8 minutes? Okay. I just wanted to address a couple of things, and then I sum up everything for you.
All right. Sounds great.
Okay. In my survey, I had to develop it to look at some of the aspects of crime when it comes to African Americans. And from it, I had some very, very good inputs, and I got inputs from professionals all around the country.
Uh-huh.
And when I put this together, I put in graphs and I did statistical data to how this information was correlating, because the only people that were involved in doing the surveys were African Americans. But let me go through one that was very, very shocking to me. And I said, this doesn't add up, but we will see how it goes, because probably in a year or so I want to do a follow-up on it. In my survey, I asked them, I said, the criminal justice system relies on incarceration as the primary strategy to reduce crimes committed by African Americans. Now, offhand, you say, well, yeah, do they? And if you looked at my book, it comes through and it breaks this down into responsibilities, and it just shows you a little bit about what I was talking about. So let me turn to that and give you some information on that.
Okay. Which question was that?
That was question number six.
Six, okay.
Okay.
Gotcha.
And this is how it broke down. When it came to strongly agree with that, 48.8% agreed with that.
Oh, man.
Now, that's strongly agree now.
Okay.
Now, the ones that agreed was 37.3%.
Mm.
Next, had some that did not know. The ones that did not know was 5.5%. And the people that disagreed, now, these were blacks now, the ones that disagreed was 8.5% disagreed. And we had no one that strongly disagreed.
Okay.
So you see, and if you're looking at it as a statistical, blacks believe that to be true. So by overwhelming, you know, over 87%, 85, 86% says, okay, that's a tool that they use against African Americans. So I found that very, you know, intriguing. And let me share one more with you that I found, and that's question, let me find it here, and that way you can look at it with yours. I don't know how you would have answered that. See, I thought we'd have time where you would have had this completed, and then I could have gone with
I didn't look at my email in time, that's why. Are you still there?
Hello.
Okay.
Hey, are you still there?
Yeah. You were
okay.
We got
I'll
3 minutes.
My other phone. Are you still there?
Yeah. I said we got 3 minutes.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
You there?
Yeah, hold on. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. And the last one I wanted... Beg your pardon?
I said I got 3 minutes.
Okay. Number eight.
Okay.
If you were an upper-middle-class African-American... living in a low-income neighborhood, you would move. Now, what would you do on number eight while I go to it and get the real statistics for you?
I would move.
Okay, you would, huh?
Yes.
Let me share with you what your fellow African-Americans think about that.
Okay.
25.9%. Said they would strongly agree with that. They would move.
Okay.
Now, agree was 36.3%.
Uh-huh.
But this is what really shocked me. 23.4% said they didn't know. Okay?
Yeah.
And you had 12.9% said, I disagree. And you had 1.5% that strongly disagreed, so they would not move. I would move.
They would move. People would move.
That's right.
For a better life.
I just wanted to share that and to give you a brief wrap-up of how the system works in my book.
Uh-huh.
I looked at psychological factors. I looked at the social factors of interacting blacks to blacks, and I found out some very intriguing things that blacks don't trust blacks.
That's exactly right.
And it's in my book. I looked at self-esteem issues.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at collective responsibilities. I looked at faith.
Mm-hmm.
Which should be the cornerstone of us, but it's not.
Excuse me, Dr. Johnson, can you do me a favor? Tell me where we can buy your book at.
Okay, you can buy it on Amazon.com. All you have to do is go to the website and type in the title, and it will come right up.
Okay, give us the title.
American Criminal Justice System, The Effects of Psychological and Socioeconomic Factors on African Americans.
Okay. Okay, Dr. Johnson, would you like to come back on my show again?
Oh, definitely, because I'm writing my second book. It should be out next month.
Great, 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 great. So I will be calling you again. I want to say thank you. I enjoy talking to you. And I'm going to say God bless with your new book and the book you wrote. And hoping to see you soon.
All right.
Here. And this has been Blog Talk Radio, Lili 44. And I would like to say to everyone, good night. Bye-bye.